with you to be asked to come and to speak on this very unusual Sunday. However, I feel fortified by so many of you whom I've known over the years, and even a sister-in-law in the congregation this morning, and that is helpful. As I told Alan Friebel, I can't say anything about my high school past that's not true, but the fact that he is here to verify anything I did or did not do or might not say. Alan, I was thinking about you this morning when I put on my tie. You might not remember it, but in Joyce Reynolds' living room, you taught me how to tie a Windsor tie knot back in high school. And that was a long time ago. We've all been stunned by the news of Paul's passing. And he has been on our minds, and he is on our minds right now, and he will continue to be on our minds and our heart. And our thoughts do go out to Christy, knowing that she is going to need the undergirding of each one of you here who know her and care for her and appreciate where she is. Our service this evening, this afternoon at 5, will really be focused on Paul and his life and his ministry. And this morning I thought it might be well for us simply to think in more general terms about how we manage such circumstances as these. And much of what I have to say is precisely what Jenny has already said in her beautiful statement with the children. And what a wonderful choir they were, incidentally. Don't you appreciate them? Yes. And having already committed myself now, I must say that this choir also In fact, I have to ask the soloist, were you at St. Paul's Church decades ago, by any chance? I thought I recognized your voice. Beautiful. I'd like to have us center in now, if we would, by saying a prayer. We'll do this antiphonally, an echo effect, where I will give the first line, and then you repeat the second line, you repeat right after me what I've said. This is a Celtic or Celtic prayer that many of us use every day. So would you pray with me? I weave silence upon my lips. Respond, please. I weave silence upon my lips. I weave silence into my mind. I weave silence within my heart. Calm me, O Lord, as you still the storm. Still me, O Lord, keep me from harm. May all tumult within me cease. Endow me, Lord, with your peace. It was the day that John F. Kennedy died that a student was walking down the hall at San Jose State College. He was beside himself. He didn't know what to do or where to turn, and he spotted his psychology teacher down the hall, and so he went down to him and said, "What can we do now?" And the psychologist said, "Come into my office and let's cry." There are times when crying seems like the most appropriate and responsible thing we can do. And as we go from here to where we need to be, we also will carry with us those emotions that says crying indeed is okay. We wonder about why tears well up as they do so often. Tears of joy, as well as tears of sadness and sorrow. But they have their place. Jesus wept. The human side of him simply had to express itself as it does within us. And the women at the cross with John certainly wept. They had to. What else could they do? When we refer to weeping or tears now, it's not simply the act of the tears flowing, but the whole countenance that has to do with tears. Some of us may not actually shed them, but we are in that mode where it's something that we feel we need to do if we could and if we can. This President's Day is coming. And for many of us, when we think of President's Day, we think of Abraham Lincoln as the one who stands out. Often he has been described as one whose face was the picture of sorrow. I think of his face as being the portrait of pain. He did go through so much. When you think of the fact that he was hated by many. He was treated in the most ugly way by others. Cartoons and major papers would paint him out as the big gorilla. The nation was divided. Congress was divided. His cabinet wasn't always supportive. Some of his generals, two in particular, were disloyal to him. McClellan was always in the way until finally Lincoln had to fire him. But the grief that he felt in terms of his personal and political life was simply magnified by the loss of his son, Willie, who was simply the apple of his eye and Mary's eye. Willie was 11 years old. He'd had the run of the Capitol before. It was so devastating that Abraham Lincoln and Mary simply felt that they could not move forward, yet he knew that the country was counting on him, needing him. He couldn't stand to know what was happening in the country. 10% of the people between the ages of 18 and 40 in the north of the men were killed. 30% of the men in the south between 18 and 40 were killed. 750,000. And the weight of that was thoroughly on his shoulders. But Willie's loss simply compounded it. 2 days after the funeral service, he locked himself in the office all that day, and he reported that he spent the day in tears, crying. The time comes when it seems as though that is what we need to do. And out of what is called the dark night of the soul, as was called by the mystics, often comes a creative time. It's a healing time. It puts us back on our feet when we're able to express those deep emotions that we have. Khalil Gibran wrote many, the prophet, probably most of us here are aware of the prophet, but he wrote many other books, and one was entitled Tears and Laughter. Because he knew there was a relationship. Moving on now to talk about laughter. Some would say that it's the opposite of crying. And I would contend, no, it's akin of crying. The two emotions come out, and each one is therapeutic as it serves us. Memorial services, you've been to many, I'm sure. Often where a microphone is passed out and then people, you know, raise their hand and they want to speak. And so often it's something humorous. Sometimes it's appropriate and sometimes it's not appropriate in terms of the stories people tell. But so often when it happens, even the family in grief will be smiling and be laughing as a story is told that lightens the situation and provides the other perspective of who the person was who had passed on. And we welcome that humor when it does happen. Sometimes We have to laugh, even in the most desperate situations. Shackleton led a team down to the South Pole, an expedition there. And on one day, they sent out a smaller group of four or five, something like that, to explore one area that they hadn't really visited yet. It was just a day trip. It was a warm day. It was beautiful. And they didn't take all the things that they would ordinarily have taken. They went out, but they stayed longer than they intended to. And as they were coming back, the sun was starting to slip toward the horizon. And they looked off and they saw their camp in distant. And they knew there was no way they could make it going the route they came, and it could mean their demise. The leader of the group came back and said, "Take those tarps." They took the tarps off the sleds they had, and they used them to slide down this long glacial hill, which would bring them closer to it so they might be able to make it. It's reported in Shackleton's diary that as they went down that hill, sliding and sledding, they were laughing like children. Here they were in a dire situation, but the laughter came out. And it must have energized them to go the rest of the way, because they did make it where they needed to go. There is a place for laughter. Jesus wept. Jesus laughed. Or did he? We don't know. There's no place in our Gospels that indicate that Jesus actually laughed. However, I know Pastor Paul gave a sermon ahead of Sunday that was dedicated to, was it holy laughter or something like that, the laughter of Jesus, and he was intending one for the spring, a repeat, because it was so well received and he had more to say about Jesus' sense of humor. Elton Tubrud wrote a book which is entitled Jesus, a Christ and Laughter. Christ and Humor, it was Christ and Humor. And I have a feeling that Pastor Paul maybe turned to that book. In it, Elton Tubrud points out some of the stories that Jesus told that still resonate with us. A lot that he said in terms of laughter and what was humorous probably has not passed through the generations to us, so it sounds like anything that would be unusual. You know, times have changed and our approach to life and perspectives have changed, but not the stories that Jesus told, like the mustard plant, small, growing up, being so tall that birds could nest in a mustard plant, or a camel going through the eye of a needle. Now, probably the word needle referred to a gate that was in the wall around Jerusalem. It was called the Needle. And still, picture, if you would, in this little short wall. It's called a postern gate, too. Rauschenbusch's poem, "In the castle of my soul is a little postern gate, whereat when I enter I am in the presence of God." Well, such a gate was there. And picture a camel trying to crawl through that. It must have been hilarious the way Jesus was telling it, trying to picture that sort of thing happening. Or who would light a lamp for the house and then put a bushel basket on it or put it under a table? You know, it's ridiculous. Jesus used hyperbole and exaggeration to get his point across, but he did it in such a way that it would strike a humorous note with the people who heard it. Elton Tubrud tells of telling one of the stories to his grandson about the fellow who was critical of another, and Jesus said, "Well, that's like one person with a speck in his eye," or like talking about a person with a speck in his eye when he has a log in his own. And when he told it, the grandson just broke out laughing. And probably most of us didn't do it the first time we heard it, because we're too sophisticated for one thing, aren't we? But beyond that, you know, we're too analytical. But a child could hear it, and a child could laugh. Jesus must have laughed. As Jesus obviously had that sense of humor. Coming back to Abraham Lincoln, he did too. In fact, he was notorious, if not famous or notorious, for interrupting very serious meetings where they were talking about even strategies having to do with the war or politics. And he said, "Well, that reminds me of a story that I heard back when I was a child in Illinois." And then he would interrupt all that to tell his story. And what it would do often would be to release the tension that was there and get people on board again, and they could relax and work together. Carl Sandburg wrote a book on the life of Jesus called The Prairie, Life of Lincoln, called The Prairie Years. And in it, he tells about Abraham Lincoln meeting Peter Cartwright, who had been a Methodist circuit rider. Then in Illinois, he was a secretary of education for the state and was in the House of Representatives of the state of Illinois. And he was running for U.S. Congress, as was Lincoln. And back in that day, they had debates, which were really debates. And they would last sometimes for a day or two. And in this one case, they were in Illinois, they'd had their debate during the day. That evening, Peter Cartwright was going to hold an evangelical service, revival service in a tent. And Lincoln slipped in the back. And in the course of his sermon, Peter Cartwright said, "All who wish to go to heaven, please stand." And most of them stood. Then he said, "Most of you who do not wish to go to hell, stand." And everybody else stood. All but one person stood. And Cartwright looked back and said, "Mr. Lincoln, I notice that you didn't stand for either option. Where are you going?" Lincoln stood very slowly up to his 6 foot four stature. And he said, "I came here to listen respectfully, and I did not expect to be singled out. But Brother Cartwright, you asked me a direct question, and so I will give you a direct answer. Where am I going? I'm going to Congress." And the people in that congregation did the same thing you did, I'm sure. There is a place for laughter, for tears, and for laughter. But beyond those two faculties that we have is certainly the spiritual support that we find in our congregation, we find in prayer, and find in Scripture. There was a gentleman in my church in Hollister, which I served many years ago. I got to know quite well. He and his wife were in church every Sunday, and we visited in their home. He was an orchardist, apricots, naturally, down there. It could be walnuts also, but it was apricots. His name was John. I don't recall his last name. His wife died unexpectedly, and he came to talk to me about it. The service was a couple of weeks later, so there was plenty of time to talk and think together. And he said one day in my office, "We've been a part of this church for many years, and I have a strong faith. I do believe that there is a source of love beyond our human understanding. I do believe that there is value in prayer that attaches us to that love, helps us communicate. I believe in grace. I feel accepted. But somehow now it doesn't come together. My mind, my heart, my soul seems to be a blank." We prayed for a bit and saw him a couple of times before the service. But I'll never forget the funeral service. When it was over, he was the last one to leave. His children were out at the door. He walked up to the casket, and he had both hands on it, and he stood there the longest time. And then he brought the hands together in what was obviously prayer. I could see him moving his lips. And all of a sudden, he stood up straight. And he turned around. He had a determined look on his face. He looked over to me and he nodded, as if to say, "I'm ready." And he marched out of that funeral home. And he lived a full life for those next 2 years. And when I had his service, I told the story of what I saw. And what he found that day, he found that spiritual strength to go on because he could come to God in prayer, and he did. Roderick Hill was a member of the church I served, St. Mark's, Sacramento. Roderick Hill had been, 10 years prior, the Adjutant General of the California National Guard. And he was there with his troops at Watts. He had gone with a mission to try to restore the peace, to end the violence, to bring some goodwill. But he had two problems. One was the rioters, and the other was the mayor, who wanted him to go in with force and firepower, and Ron refused to do it. He stood up to the mayor. He said he could do it, because every single night that he was there at Watts, he was on his knees, praying, asking for God's guidance and the inner peace to deal with what he had to. There are times when prayer is the answer. There's times when our spiritual life comes to full flower in our times of need. Jesus laughed. Jesus cried. Jesus prayed. We too can follow in those footsteps, and we need to. You will come together as a congregation. As you come by those still waters of prayer and meditation and are restored, it'll take you through that valley, that shadowed valley through which we're passing. And you will find there are green pastures out there for ministries of love, and you will go. And you will find new strength as individuals and as a congregation. Because Paul and your prior pastors inspired you to do so.